I believe, but why all this suffering? We're looking at the topics that we might find now in the book of Romans. Instead of verse by verse this time, we're going to explore through topics, concerns that everybody has at one time or another. Our faith is often sort of thrown off kilter by the realities of life itself, and we just wonder which is sometimes the real reality. Colin Cook here, and How It Happens. Thanks for joining me today. You're listening to a broadcast on Good News. This is a broadcast that trains your faith in what God has done for us in His Son, Jesus Christ. As we learn the gospel, we learn how to believe. We learn to trust. We learn to overcome the doubts about God, the fears about God. We learn to break through the guilt that we feel in relation to God so that that doesn't separate us from Him. We learn that He has made it all possible for us. I believe, but why all this suffering? I get it. There are many people whose faith is absolutely rocked by the suffering of the world. Quite frankly, even though I'm interested in international affairs and what goes on around this globe, and I read a lot of news, I can only take so much of it. I have to switch to Antiques Roadshow or something to just get something normal, something pleasant, something harmless, something innocent, just to get away from it all. I'm talking, of course, about suffering in the widest sense globally, and all the troubles and all the wars and the terrorism and the tsunamis and the earthquakes, natural disasters, not just those in our own personal lives. Perhaps, maybe it's true for you, I think it might be true for me, that I handle my own troubles better than I handle the concern over other people's troubles. Where do we start with all this? How do we get a handle on it? I think one thing we have to accept as Christians that is very often difficult to accept, and that is that the whole world, my friends, everybody, is under the power of death. Now that sounds an odd kind of thing to say, but this is a fallen world. That's obvious. We know that as serious Christians, biblically based Christians, and yet, in this quarantined Western world, we tend to forget it. Somehow we have been able to close ourselves off from a lot of the sufferings on this planet. We have good insurance policies, we have good health systems, we have medicines to cure us overnight, we have plenty of food, we have nice homes, we have a good infrastructure, good roads, we have lots of electricity, we have plenty of pure water, we keep wars at bay, we have good jobs. And it's so easy to see, as a result, it's so easy to see trouble and chaos as an exception, as a surprise, as something that doesn't fit into the normal, cozy, easy round of our lives. Maybe a child, a baby dies, and somebody else lives to 90, and we think, why does one live and is blessed with such a long life, and the other one has the misfortune of an early death, with not even a chance to have lived out his full days? Here comes a terrorist attack on a school, or some other experience, some students are killed and others live, and we think that those who live are in life, and those who die are in death. We think that the ones that live are blessed, and the ones that, well, somehow they weren't blessed, and we don't seem to understand that, or we can't figure it out. But when you get into the Bible, when you get into God's Word, you get this stunning reality that all humankind is under the power of death. Through one man, Paul said, through one man sin entered the world, and death through sin. That's Romans 5, verse 12. Death reigned from then on. Death reigned. Notice that. The idea of reigning is a kingdom. The idea of a kingdom is that there's a king, and the king in this kingdom is death, and it is reigning. Not just over a few, but all mankind. Through one man's offence, Paul says in verse 17, death reigned. One man's offence, death reigned. And that death, according to Paul and according to the gospel, isn't just death at the end of life, death after having lived 70 or 80, 90 or 100 years. It's not the termination of life. Death is the state of life itself. Death is what life is. Now, try to grasp that. Death is not what happens at the end of life, but death is what this life is. So that even from the beginning of our days, things decay, things disappoint, things bring grief, things bring sorrow, things don't work out. Everything winds down. Everything unravels. This is what death is. Whether a person dies at the age of 5 or 95, he's under the power of death. Whether a person has a happy life or a sad life, those lives are equally under the power of death. And as I've said, that death is not simply the termination of life at the end of long, happy, fulfilled days. It is the state of life itself. And Paul says in Romans chapter 5, verse 18, one man's offense, that is Adam's and Eve's when they broke away from God, one man's offense brought judgment to all men, resulting in condemnation. And so this death is not simply the absence of life, it is a state of condemnation and judgment, a heaviness that bears down upon us right from the beginning of our days. Now, this isn't all because God hates us and God is endlessly running around the world spying out people to kill them and destroy them and judge them and punish them. It is a tragedy that humanity brought upon itself. It's not a judgment for individualized sins, so that if somebody dies early, he must have been a worse sinner than somebody who lives a long time. No, it is not individualized. It is the state of humankind. You cannot point out one person who suffers more than another and say he must have been a worse sinner than somebody else. You have to acknowledge that all mankind is under this judgment and condemnation, which is a state of death, which is what life is all about. And we brought it, not you and I individually, but Adam and Eve brought it upon the human race right from the beginning. So that the prophet, when he is told to cry out, he says, "What shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and all the loveliness is like the flower of the field. The grass withers, the flower fades." That's what all men are. But it's so hard for us to understand that, to believe it, to accept it. We grow up as young kids, well, as little babies with happiness in our spirits and bodies and minds. We just can hardly wait to jump out of our bodies and into the world. The children are so buoyant and happy. We look upon children with a certain state of envy because they seem to know what life is all about. And of course, youth grow up with all of these visions and dreams and goals and expectations. They think that this world is life, but it's not. And it is the rest of the life, the death life, to discover from the age of about 18 to 80 that all this life is grass and all this life is as the flower of the field. I know this sounds very, very pessimistic. You may say to me, "Colin, what in the world are you talking like this for? I came to listen to you to gain some hope, to gain some joy, to gain some expectation of something better than I have, and you're telling me it's all death." Yes, and I'll tell you more. What about this? Psalm 90, "You turn man to destruction. You say, 'Return, O children of men, for 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it is past, and like a watch in the night. You carry them away like a flood. They are like sheep in the morning. They are like grass which grows up. In the morning it flourishes and grows up. In the evening it is cut down and withers. For we have been consumed by your anger and by your wrath. We are terrified. For all our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh.'" I'm sorry, I don't have any more news about this life than that. This quarantined Western world has created an illusion about life. It has created an illusion that this is life, when in fact this life is a death. We are like the people in Plato's allegory of the cave. We were born and die, all dancing around in a circle in this black cave, and all we can see is the silhouette of ourselves dancing around the walls of the cave, because there's a fire in the middle and it reflects upon our bodies and we see only the silhouette. And then somebody escapes from the cave and he sees blue skies and he smells the scent of flowers and he sees three dimensions and he sees his own body all colorful and three-dimensional. And he goes back into the cave and tells everybody about it and they think he's mad and they kill him. That life outside, my friend, is Jesus, the only life that has ever truly lived life on this planet. Is Jesus Christ. He was under the power of death until his death, but when he rose from the dead, he was a being no longer subject to or controlled by or having been infiltrated by death. That is the only life that has ever lived, and by that life we shall live. But this life is not that life. This life is death. The reason we are so surprised by suffering is that we think this planet is life, and that death and suffering are exceptions. No, they are the norm. All men are grass. All men are like the flower of the field that fades and will die. Here we are scarpering about running after life, so we think, when in fact we are actually embracing death. It is your own wickedness that will punish you, says Jeremiah 2 verse 19. Your own ways and your own deeds have brought all this upon you, says Jeremiah 4:18. Your wrongdoing has upset nature's order, says Jeremiah 5:25. Do not run after other gods to your own ruin, says Jeremiah 7 verse 6. Listen to me then. These kingdoms of the world are under the power of death. That is why suffering should be no surprise to you. It's the norm in this kingdom. What it does is point us away from this world with its suffering to Jesus Christ, the only one who brought true life into this planet, and the only one who, through faith in him, will bring in a new world in which sorrow and sighing and pain and suffering shall flee away. I'm looking for your help, my friends, and I think it's coming in. I need your help for next month's radio rent. It's $850. I'm not seeing all of it in, and I want to think ahead instead of getting, well, I try not to be anxious, but you know, I'm human like everybody else, and I want to try to allay that anxiety by getting the money in before it's due on the 10th of the month. If you would like to underwrite the radio broadcast, $850, please send your check to Faith Quest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado 80160. Faith Quest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado 80160. If you can't quite manage all of that and two of you would like to donate $400 each, or four of you would like to donate $200 each or so, then please send that donation to Faith Quest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado 80160. Your donations, my friend, help this radio broadcast to continue with its message of grace and good news and the hope of eternal life that we have in Jesus Christ. If you'd like to make your donation by PayPal, go to our website, faithquestradio.com, faithquestradio.com. Help me with this radio broadcast, $850 per month. Thank you so much for your support. These donations, remember, are tax deductible. I'll send you a receipt at the beginning of the new year. I'll see you next time. Cheerio and God bless.